Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining me today from St. Louis, Missouri is Kent Swagler. Kent is the Director of Corporate Compliance and Ethics for Bi-State Development, and we're going to be talking today about public-private partnerships. Kent, first of all, thanks for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure, Adam. Pleasure to be with you today.
And for me, too. Let's dive right into it. A lot of times on joint ventures in the corporate setting, there's a problem that both sides thought that the other was handling the compliance program. Is that a problem with public-private partnerships as well?
It can be, and especially if you don't have a corporate compliance program in place. We started ours back in July of 2011. At that time, our general counsel found a need, especially to hopefully reduce legal and litigation liability issues for our agency. We were founded back in 1950 as a compact between the bi-state region in the St. Louis area, Missouri and Illinois, for regional economic development. It dovetailed and grew into more of the public transit side, but especially with a lot of our partnerships to expand our transit services, and now we've developed a very collaborative and very highly successful collaborative arrangement for the St. Louis Regional Freightway and some of our other initiatives in with our research institute. Our newest light rail station, Cortex, is a public and private partnership. And over the years of developing the corporate compliance program, we've now enacted, especially in our procurement actions, that they are the vendors are required to comply with a number of our internal policies and procedures. So it can be a problem, but I think especially working together in a collaborative arrangement, it can be a great success story and a value-added partner that we're looking out for both of our mutual interests.
Yeah, and that's a really good point for people to remember, but one that's hard for them to sometimes get is that, look, this isn't about creating rules. It's about figuring out ways to protect ourselves and make this work for both of us. Since public entities don't typically have a compliance program, do you have to overcome a lot of pushback? And how is it best to overcome that for people who do face it?
Well, and especially, pushback internally initially. You know, we had a lot of our senior management was saying, well, when I first started the program and, literally starting it from scratch, what are you going to be doing? I don't understand what you're going to be doing. And aren't you kind of duplicating our effort? And which was my number one priority was not to do that. And I think especially sometimes baptism under fire, we had quite a big issue that arose on our public transit side within the Missouri Department of Natural Resources with our underground fuel tanks. And we were very close to getting shut down. And they got me involved and worked with the DNR and as well the state attorney general that we were able to get the issues resolved and work with them in a collaborative area to get them resolved. And now we're fully, we've been fully compliant now for going on 5 years. And those types of success stories turn your people who are resisting or pushing back into they have become our strongest advocates.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, do you get pushback ever specifically in the area of, look, we're a government entity, that's for the corporate sector. Why do we need a compliance program?
There was some initial pushback, but since, especially in our environment, we are so heavily reliant and required to comply with so many federal, state, and local requirements, especially on the transit side, that part of it, and as well, since we're primarily publicly funded, we're required to have external audits and financial audits and everything. From a lot of aspects, there wasn't a lot of pushback. It was just more of concern of duplication of effort. And once I convinced, the senior management that, we weren't interested in duplicating effort and using the results of those audits to ensure that we are staying compliant. Again, they became advocates for us, and in many cases, especially on our human resources side, when we've had employee separations, terminations, that when we show that the employees have read our code of conduct, they've gone through our training, various training programs, and they can use that evidence to say, well, you were terminated because of this, because you violated this. The end result is, they have no argument, no justification for it. So, again, those type of examples make it very easy to turn your people who are pushing back into some of your strongest advocates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to be able to give the proof of the effectiveness of the program, not just against the seven elements definition, but actually in progress.
Are there any other challenges that you find in implementing the program across the partnership, and what would be some of the good techniques for overcoming them?
Part of that is to say, we're not trying to put rules and, come down with a strong hand I use the classic example of, I'm the HIPAA administrator for our agency as well, our security officer, privacy officer, and when you have to put business associate agreements in place, that's by its nature and by requirement, you have to have a collaborative effort. And that's what I use as an example to those vendors that say, hey, we're asking you now to also, because you're dealing with our, information security, that you have to comply with our information security records management, records retention policies. As part of your requirements on the contract, well, you have to comply with our requirements. And it's also an easy sell with our vendors that work anywhere around our light rail alignment. They are required to take safety, different levels of safety training. So from that aspect, it has to be collaborative too, that, if they're going to win the contract, they have to comply with our safety requirements, because it's in their best interest to be safe when they're working around our light rail system.
Yeah, it's a shame most people don't realize how closely compliance and safety are in terms of protecting people, just, from physical harm versus other or harms as well. So who do you think are the key stakeholders to get involved in this? I mean, you mentioned that, you got leadership on board, which is obviously terrific. Are there any stakeholders that are more important for really galvanizing support for the program?
Again, both your senior management, our board of commissioners, which is basically, if you want to equivalent like a board of directors or, of a company. And and what we did a couple years ago on our fifth anniversary, I put together a 5-year return on investment presentation to the board so that they could actually see, you approved this 5 years ago. What have we done since that time? What things have we accomplished, kind of historical perspective, as well as, the estimated, litigation savings and the return on investment for making this investment in the corporate compliance. And, I just recently presented an updated version of that where we said an estimated savings of probably over $3.1 million in litigation costs alone,
Wow.
Just in this past year. So, but also, I think there's an important stakeholder here, and that's our, all of our employees. And I make a point that, when I train, most of our employees are transit operators, mechanics, et cetera, about 2,000 out of our 2,600 employees. And I make a point to, if I call it compliance or management by walking around, I get out to the facilities and I visit with the people and say, how are things going? And if, the operators bring up a suggestion or an idea during training about improving safety, we've taken two or three of those ideas and actually have, worked and implemented those to make, their working environment, their office environment, a much safer environment, from operator assaults and those types of things that have been, that do go on and do occur on occasion. And by making those efforts and saying, we value your feedback and your interest and listening to them, they become, by and large, because they put the word out in the street, hey, they really mean what they say.
Mm-hmm. No, that's terrific, the ability to demonstrate it. I want to circle back for one last question. I mean, I love this fact that you gave a five-year review of all the savings. So, you know, you mentioned litigation avoided. Are there any other metrics you'd recommend compliance people track so that they can demonstrate the value of the program providing the organization?
We also, you know, I put together one of the first things that I did when I started the program, which we've gotten a significant amount of recognition for in our external audits and reviews, is I put together, and it took me about 8 months to do it, what I call my consolidated compliance requirements list, which is, you know, frankly, it's a massive spreadsheet that even printing ledger size, it's, you know, it's pretty small print. But in essence, what we've captured by division and by department is all the legal federal, state, local requirements. We document, you know, when they're reviewed and when they're audited, any type of reporting requirements that are listed. When was the last report done? When was the last review done? If there are any open issues, we track those to closure. Periodically, we review those to make sure that they don't reoccur. And by having, that was the first and foremost thing our president and CEO asked us was, I need a picture. I know that finance is doing well, and I know this department is doing well, but I need that overall perspective. What is my picture of the entire agency from a compliance standpoint? And we reported by percentages. Primarily, most of the times where things aren't compliant is maybe an inspection or a review wasn't done, but it, you know, we catch it. We follow up and we review it on a quarterly, if not at least semi-annual basis, to make sure these different reviews and inspections are all taking place. And if they're not, then we catch them, we record that, and we report it. But in essence, ultimately, it's saving us from missing compliance requirements and not report, you know, and not documenting those.
Wow, that's really remarkable that you've been able to capture all that and keep track of it for everyone and be able to consistently demonstrate the value to the program. Well, Kent, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and share what you're doing and advice for anyone else who's looking at a compliance program in a public-private partnership. And frankly, I think it's good advice for anyone in a joint venture as well. I also want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Chertletop from SEC and HCCA saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.